You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
This is episode 437, dated Friday, November 7th, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi there. Welcome once again to In Perspective. I am Bob Branco. Glad to be here today with all of you on this fine day. This is episode 437, dated Friday, November 7th, 2025. Before we continue, let me introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, what's happening today?
In Oregon, our atmospheric river has gone away, taking away our recycle can, which we can't find, so we have to call and get a new one. Weather here is kind of nice until next week, and then we'll get back to our usual rainy weather.
Maybe it's floating down the river somewhere.
Could be.
Here in New England, we are about ready for a cold snap. It's going to arrive early next week. Temperatures during the day in the 40s, at night in the 20s. It's going to snow in parts of New England next week, I understand. And parts of the Midwest, it's going to cool down a lot, half of the United States, I believe. Anyway, before we continue, let me say hi to some people and thank them. Raymond Gay, our producer, thank you for what you do. Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our shows on the Friendship Chat service. We appreciate that. Okay, also the media sources, thank you for airing us when you do. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. Thank you very much for archiving our programs on my website. If any of you want to check out an archived program, they are listed by date, episode number, and guest and title. And all you have to do to find them is go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts, click on them, and you will see most of our archived shows from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to Cindy, our Zoom host for today's program, along with Brad, our streamer. And because we are being streamed, let me give out my email address for those people who would like to send us some thoughts and comments about our show. We always like to hear from our listeners. That's what this show is all about, besides our guests and everything else that goes with us. It's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. Today we're going to be talking with a winner of the 2024 American Council of the Blind Scholarship. He's a scholarship winner, and his name is Frank Ritter. Frank, it's a pleasure having you on In Perspective today. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So you won a scholarship, and we're going to talk about that, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a doctoral student at the University of Houston, Clear Lake, with a study in education leadership. I am currently on my third and hopefully my final year.
Excuse me, Frank, you're a little muffled.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you. Go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, I am a doctoral student at the University of Houston, Clear Lake. This is my third year studying in the field of education. I'm currently writing my dissertation, and hopefully I'll graduate in December of 2026. I am also a high school teacher. It's an alternative high school for at-risk students who get kicked out of their traditional homeschool setting for behavior infractions, such as vaping in school or fighting. And my mission is to help those students realign their behavior so they can be successful at their home campus. I'm also a musician. I'm a professional musician as well. I play steel drums, and I've had the fortune to play with my buddy Peter at the ACB convention this past summer in Dallas.
You're both drummers.
Yes,
we are. We are indeed. And we'll talk more about that later. Frank, talk about your dissertation. What are you writing about, and what prompts you to write about that topic?
Well, these adolescents are having trouble with vaping. That's the big epidemic that's going on. It's a nationwide problem within our school systems. So my topic is on the experiences in Texas of teachers dealing with what's called Texas State House Bill 114. And House Bill 114 mandates that students who are in possession or distribution or under the influence of any kind of vaping apparatus are mandatorily sent to the disciplinary alternative education programs for anywhere from 30 to 60 days and sometimes longer. And so that's my mission, is to help them re-examine and refocus and recalibrate their choices so they can be successful when they go back to their home campus and not experience exclusionary discipline or become a recidivist student at the alternative campus. Because I'm asking them to think about joining my mission of hashtag graduation so that these at-risk students can be successful.
So your dissertation is what more precisely?
So I'm looking at the experiences of alternative education teachers dealing with complying with House Bill 114 and that school level policy. So a dissertation, a lot of people think that a dissertation is this big, broad research, but it's really just a little tiny speck on the research board. And it's really teaching me how to write properly the structure of a dissertation so that I can take this beginning contribution and expand on it at a later time. Right now I'm starting with what are teachers at the alternative campus? What is their experience with complying with school level policy, with complying with Texas House Bill 114? So I'm looking at doing a quantitative and qualitative mixed method study. And that's very intricate. It's an intricate, approach, but it's going to give our reading audience of scholars a firsthand insight to this novice research of what's going on in our school systems so we can make better choices for our students that we serve. If that makes sense.
It does. And for a layman, what are your basic findings? What are your conclusions?
Well, right now I'm finding a couple of themes. Well, actually a panoply of things. First of all, exclusionary discipline can lead students who are not part of our dominant culture, such as brown and black students, it's putting them at risk of being part of the prison pipeline, which is definitely not a good choice for our schools. And we don't want our students, particularly if you're not part of a dominant group, experiencing the prison pipeline. It's also when students are vaping and they're getting caught with it and they're being sent out of a traditional home campus setting, they're experiencing mental as well as physical health problems and respiratory problems. And so I'm helping them. I'm not trying to stop them from vaping, but I'm asking them to recalibrate and reconsider their choices so that their brain is inclined. They can make better choices to focus on the mission of, like I said, hashtag graduation.
So based on what you're saying, what I'm hearing you say between the lines is, if I understand the policy, if I am vaping and I get caught once with the equipment on campus, I don't collect $500. I don't pass go. I go to this alternative school. Do I have that right? There's no second chance, right? If you got caught once, you're sent to that school.
That's correct. Our governor, Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick and a few other legislators in our Texas government has mandated that schools must comply. There's a zero tolerance policy. And zero tolerance policies were originally crafted and ratified for guns, zero guns on campus. And it has evolved into drugs, illicit drugs, fighting, other student problems that are related to behavior and development. And so right now my focus is because the research is so little and it's so new. So I'm really focused on what is going on? Why are students vaping? Why are they choosing to vape on school campuses? And whether it's marijuana or whether it's nicotine. So there's a serious problem across the state. And so there's a mentality that principals want to try and get students to quit, which I think that's an uphill battle in my experience.
Frank, how old are these? I'm sorry, continue.
Go ahead, sir.
I was going to ask, how old are these students for the most part?
So I'm particularly focused on high school students. So that ages range anywhere from 14. I have students who are 20 and 21 years old who are receiving special education services. So I have students that are 20 and some are 21, which is astonishing. And so being at a disciplinary alternative education program, it's kind of like a safety net so they don't experience the prison pipeline. So my approach for these students is I'm holding them accountable, but I'm also complementing that with love, because there's nothing better than love. Because I learned that from my Christian values. So I credit Jesus Christ for that one. And you can choose to be tough. You can choose to be aggressive. And if there's teachers that are doing that, I believe that students are buying into my approach that's centered on love and accountability for their choices. It's kind of like a recalibration process, a strategic recalibration process. So they're better prepared and understand that, hey, you might not be making the best choice that's conducive so you can be successful.
Can some folks misinterpret that as a reform school? Would that be a term that some people might confuse your program for?
Oh, I can see how any key stakeholders could misinterpret that. Sure. Some people also think that it's a babysitting place for at-risk students. There's many interpretations, but I know that my mission, in a very difficult and sometimes toxic environment is to, instead of, distributing punitive discipline and aggressiveness and toughness, is I'm going to center on love and accountability. And engagement is so critical. For example, today, and this is the first week of the new 6 weeks for our students, I had a conversation with every one of my students, showing them their grade, showing them their progress, showing them how many days left they have here at the school, and giving them a light at the end of the tunnel of hope.
Frank, we're losing you.
Okay, can you hear me?
That's better. Thank you. We're still losing you.
Okay, I'm still here.
Okay, we're losing you from time to time, Frank.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
It's not your fault. Just do your best.
Okay, I'm still here. But did you copy that response?
Yeah, I think we got most of it.
Not much, Frank. You might want to say it again.
Okay, hey, I'm going to go to a quieter area. Give me a second.
Okay.
Okay, you are listening to In Perspective, and our guest is Frank Ritter, 2024 American Council of the Blind Scholarship winner. He's talking about teaching in a school setting where students will be in focus about, you know, reforming, for lack of a better term, keep them out of the prison pipeline, which I get what the prison pipeline means. And Frank, are you with us?
I sure am.
That's all much right. Better.
Okay, good.
So Frank, can you, you talked about the power of love. And in this particular context, right? You're in this, alternative school. What does that mean to you what behaviors, as it were, tie into love as compared to, something else?
As a teacher, or what perspective do you mean, Peter?
Well, you're a teacher. You are modeling certain behaviors. I'm guessing you're taking certain attacks. And what I'm trying to figure out is, what does it mean to exhibit love in these circumstances?
So for me, it's total active engagement. I can't speak on behalf of other teachers, but for me, my approach is constant engagement. Whether I'm joking around a little bit, I know I have a witty sense of humor, as you know, Peter.
I do.
It's kind of like, it's like yours. And kids buy into that. They see the differentiated product of instruction. You know, within my school system, I see other teachers, and I'm not going to name names, but I see the aggressiveness, the aggressive approach, the desire to distribute punitive disciplines such as in-school suspensions, lunch detentions. Let's get rid of these kids. I've heard some negative stuff, and that's just cacophony to my ears. So instead of that, I try to use a harmonious approach, kind of like our music, Peter. And if we can work together as a collaborative partnership, then that, for me in my 10 years experience at the disciplinary school, has been an effective approach. It's yielding higher results of success. It's yielding meaningful relationships with my students. I've got students who are writing me emails just simply writing #graduation, which makes me tear up because it tells me that I'm planting the seed of future success in these young developing students' minds. For example, today I lost a Vietnamese student who told me in private that she has autism. And when she first came to the summit, she was damaged. And I helped her realize that, hey, you know, you have talent, you have purpose. God put you here for a reason, maybe to meet me. And so she wrote me this long, extensive letter, just of gratitude and thank you. And it made me tear up. And then she drew me another picture. She drew me another picture where it says #graduation on it. So that tells me that something is right. I'm doing something right for this student that I serve.
Can you talk about, I know there's no such thing as a typical student who is caught with vaping. What is the typical, but you know, to best you can, why do people do this? What's the lifestyle, as it were, the family situation, their pattern of behavior of the students who bring this stuff on campus? They know they're going to get nailed if they get caught. What prompts them to do it, do you think?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I think poverty, dysfunction within the family, which is very similar and parallel to many organizations across our globe.
You bet.
A lack of partnership with parents, or even lack of parents. So that element of deep-rooted depression kicks in. And so when you feel like you're running into a brick wall, especially when these kids are coming to school and it's just not a meaningful experience for these kids.
Yeah.
Sometimes teachers can be aggressive, and sometimes teachers can't relate. They just possibly can't relate to the kid who's, you have a teacher living in a well-to-do neighborhood, but you have students coming from the opposite of that. And I can relate to that because I grew up with no father. I grew up in poverty. My mother was on a Catholic teacher school salaries, raising four boys, mostly on her own. I could have easily gone down that route. And the temptations are always there. Even as a musician today, the temptations are there. So I tell my students that those are traps. Those are all traps. And look where it got you. And the light bulbs, it goes above their head and they're like, okay, I'm starting to understand that if I vape at school, it is a trap. If my friend and I are in the restroom together and they pass me a marijuana vape, it's a trap. And it lands them at the discipline school.
So, go ahead. I'm sorry, Frank. Go ahead.
Go ahead. That's all I got for that question. I'm sorry.
Well, I have a comment I wanted to make and see how this jives with you. One of the things that sort of strikes me about all this conversation, you mentioned about dysfunctional families, you mentioned about poverty, you mentioned about dysfunctional parenting. And what strikes me about this conversation we've had is, in many cases, these kids experience the same things in the schools that they attend. And what might break the system is for them to see that there are people who genuinely care about them, who love them in a way that, as you describe, and that often can be the thing that puts the kids in a different road, as it were. Does that ring a bell to you at all?
Oh, I concur 100%. You said the word love, and that's where I'm starting. That's my starting point. For example, I had an African American student who, very rough approach, very aggressive, you know, just deep rooted hate and anger. And he asked me, Mr. Ritter, what you mean you love me? And I said, let me show you by my actions, not by my talk, not by my prattle or my Fox News version of what I think love is. I'm going to show you by my actions. And he asked me, well, do you love that transgender student? And I said, I love every one of you. You're like my younger brothers and sisters from other mothers and misters. And he said, you give that transgender student a hug? And I said, if that student allows me to do it, and of course I did it. And the student was like, I can't believe this teacher is doing this. And so he bought into it.
Yeah.
And he started turning from really aggressive to a positive young student who has so much talent as a young African-American student who I want to be successful.
So talk a little bit about your upbringing. You said that you were raised in poverty. What prevented you, do you think, from going down the wrong path, as it were?
There's a little bit of spite. I'll be honest with you. When my dad left, it's like, okay, you left me with my mother and you left me by myself. My three brothers are non-existent and God bless them, but they have their lives to live. But I chose to be a guardian angel for my elderly mother. And she did the best that she could.
By the
way,
you still are the guardian angel for your elderly mother. We saw her last year at the convention. She's fabulous.
Oh,
and so are you with her.
I appreciate it. You know, it's never an easy endeavor, but with love comes sacrifice. Those two go hand in hand, kind of like peanut butter and jelly. So whatever I can, and remember, there's a huge payoff and God's camera is always watching. And maybe it'll make up for all the iniquities that I do. So, you know, just I've been through the mill. You know, when my mother got shot in a drive-by shooting at her school in the inner city part of Houston, it made me realize that she survived. She taught the next day after going to the emergency room. I can look up to them. I already knew she was hardcore because she's from Brooklyn, New York. And then she taught in Compton, California. So I already had mad respect for her for doing
sure.
that. And it's like she's like a wannabe Mother Teresa. And maybe I bought into those vibes because I have a sense of personal fulfillment when I'm helping somebody who's highly disadvantaged. There's such meaningfulness, and I realize I can't save them all. I've had students die on me. And it hurts. That element hurts. I've had students who just dropped out, who just quit. But I can't focus on that. I got to focus on the ones who have a desire for change. And what's really unique is that they realize that I have, and I share my personal limitations with my sight impairment. And they know I'm becoming a doctor. So that is also gives them a little bit of hope as well. And I share with my students that, hey, I'm not perfect. I just work hard. You know, when I was a young child, I had to repeat third and sixth grade. And I'm very open about that. I had very much difficulty during those developmental years. I didn't have special education services.
Yeah.
I sat in that front row as a legally blind student and just going, oh, my God, this is crazy. I know I'm not dumb, but I'm going to see what I can do to make it. And I made it.
So talk a little bit about how your visual impairment has influenced, you started talking about it, but say a little more about it, how your visual impairment has influenced your life.
That is a difficult question, but it's everybody has a cross to bear. I believe that as a Christian, and not everybody has to agree with that.
Sure.
So it can be difficult, but I'm thankful I have some vision. And my soul is telling me that, hey, Ritter, you got some vision. Use it to be an inspiration. Use it to be a champion for those who are far worse than you are. And there's an array of people. There's a myriad of people who are far worse. And I don't mean that in a bad context. It's just their challenges I sincerely, and I mean this genuinely, that their challenges, and man, boy, they probably exceed what I'm going through. So what can I do to be somebody who's a partner with you or somebody who can help you without being officiously helpful? But hey, whatever I can do to help you reach your goal, despite our limitations, we can still overcome these difficult obstacles that we're confronted with. So we too can have purpose and meaningfulness and rewarding outcomes.
So specifically, what are the subjects that you focus on in the classroom, education-wise? I know what you do for the children, how you guide them and all that, and that's wonderful. What exactly are some of the materials that you cover in that school?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, as far as the content curriculum, I teach business education courses that include finance and money management.
There should be more money management taught in schools. I say that all the time, and I'm glad you teach it.
I agree. But, you know, with that, I'm a numbers guy. For some reason, I'm very good at math. So I'll teach students. I'm not their official teacher, but students feel comfortable to ask me for pre-calculus help or statistics, elementary quantitative statistics, algebra, Euclidean geometry. And so I love helping students do that. And when students realize that they know I have a disability, they know I have to look close at the textbook or use assistive technology, and they're seeing me overcome the difficulties of a very tough subject, and it gives them a little bit of inspiration and encouragement to not give up.
You know, it's funny, Frank, you should talk about that, because as a totally blind guy all my life, I always get nervous when people talk about how much I inspire them. And it's taken me many years to come to accept that it's okay to inspire people because of my blindness, because of the stuff that I do. It's taken me many years to accept that. I don't want to get too far overboard, but I think it's what you're saying has a lot of merit, you know, that those of us, you know, who work with other people, by the way we live, can really be an inspiration and encourage them to, you know, improve.
I agree. And let's put this on the table, Peter. You inspire me. You know, my experience with you this past summer at the ACB convention, I often reflect on that experience. Somebody took some pictures of us playing music, and I often go through those pictures. I'm going, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this with this man. And our friendship that we're developing is so cool. It's so authentic and genuine, which, I know I'm legally blind, but I'm going to drive to St. Louis so I can play music with you.
Sure. I can't wait for next summer. So speaking of music, let's talk about steel drums. How did you get interested in steel drums, and how does that impact, what are you doing with it now? And sort of give us your steel drum story.
So I'm originally a guitar player, and I still play guitar. I played in a heavy metal band, and I've had fortune to play with some national touring bands. But I realize that that's such a limitation playing in a heavy metal band. You play in front of 50 people or 25 people, it gets kind of old. And I was fortunate enough that my friends that I was in high school with said, Frank, get into the steel drum ensemble at San Jacinto College in Pasadena, Texas. I was like, hey, you know, Charlie and Brent, I'm not a drummer. You know, what do you want from me? Frank, just get into the ensemble. It's going to be fun. Everybody's in it. Okay, you twisted my arm. I'm going to join the class. Just leave me alone. So I get into the class, and I took the steel drum mallet and went ding, 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 ding. You know, just hitting the drum like you've heard people do on my drum, Peter.
I have, yes.
And I fell in love with it. And that's why I have people come up and try the drum, because it's like, okay, somebody afforded me that opportunity. I want to pass that forward and give people that experience that I had. And who knows? You never know if you'll take up the steel drum or some kind of percussion instrument, which is so good for your soul.
As a fellow drummer, I agree with you.
It's so beautiful. Such a beautiful and unique instrument. So currently, I'm 20 years deep into the game. I'm writing music. I'm learning covers. Sometimes I do a solo act. And then I also play with a band. Where we're like a Jimmy Buffett style type of band. We're called Bama Breeze Sounds. We've recently played for the Houston Astros. We're trying to play the national anthem. So that's in process for a minor league baseball team called the Sugar Land Space Cowboys. So that's going to be interesting. We're playing at the Kima Boardwalk, which is a nice area, over here in Houston. Just playing as many shows as I can while trying to juggle a doctoral program and taking care of my mother. So it's keeping me very busy.
But I would
playing with these guys, it makes me want to be a better musician. whether it's through music or just being a friend to these people and playing for our patrons, our friendly patrons, and giving them that experience if they want to come up and try the drum. It's just awesome. There's no other word for it.
So before I turn this over for questions, I want to ask you one final question for now. There are other ones, of course. How do you think your life as a steel drummer and your life as an educator impact each other?
Well, I think they complement each other. Mm-hmm. You know, in some way, I know it sounds kind of funny. I've had a few people say somebody's going to make a movie about you, Frank. Or last night in my doctoral class, one of my doctoral cohort members said, "Hey, when you get famous, don't forget us." I'm just laughing at him. Like, I'm not trying to be famous. That's not even part of my machination. It's not part of my game plan.
But so let me offer I was going to offer some humor, Frank. We all have a sense of humor on this show, so I'm going to put my bit in right now before we turn our program over to our listeners. Frank, I guess it's safe to say that you're beating your own drum.
Or not beating your own drum too much.
Right, exactly.
But say a little more about the compliments of how they complement each other. You know, you're doing these two fairly different kinds of things, and you're making it work as a life.
Well, you know, I preach to my students. I'm going to use that word preach. For a successful life, because life can be very challenging, difficult. It presents a panoply of obstacles. There's an equilateral triangle that I ask my students to consider. And on one angle, it's a work on your physical regimen. And playing drums does that. But there's also playing your mental regimen. And also learning new music keeps our neural processes healthy and stimulated. And then, of course, spiritual is the other third leg of the triangle. Because without God, I wouldn't be doing any of those things.
Let's see if there are any questions. We might come back to the spiritual part.
Yes.
Let's see if there are any questions, Bob.
Cindy, do we have any hands raised? Does anybody want to talk to Frank Ritter at this time?
Now, while Cindy's talking, this is In Perspective. This is Peter Altro and Bob Branco, who is the boss. And Cindy, whenever you can talk to us about hands.
Okay. Well, I don't see any hands yet, but you know how it goes. As soon as you say that, somebody.
Let us know when that changes, Cindy.
I will.
Okay. Please do by all means. So you've mentioned your Christian faith and spiritual stuff throughout this thing. How did you connect with that spiritual journey? Talk about your faith journey.
Well, I believe my mother is the main catalyst to frame my spiritual faith. Now, when I say spiritual, I respect anybody's belief, whether you're Jewish or Muslim, it doesn't matter. As long as it centers on love, I think that is the ultimate construct that religions or spirit, whatever you want to call it, should focus on. Without love, there's just the opposite of that, and that's evil. And so love has allowed me to have the desire to want to help those who are less fortunate than I am. And my cup's about almost halfway full.
Frank, I can't resist. Without love, all you're playing is a clanging cymbal, right?
Yeah, you got it. It's
love awesome. Is everything.
All you need is love.
Say a little more about that. So your mom's got you on the journey. What's happened since?
So since she's a strict Catholic. She calls herself a Roman Catholic. For me, you know, that's your life. That's your experience. And I respect that. But for me, I referenced the movie Life of Pi, which this young man who's of Indian descent, experienced all the religions. And that movie really resonated with me. It's like, you know what? As long as it centers on love and peace and we're progressing through this life in a positive light, I don't care what you worship, whatever God you choose to worship. If it's centered on love and peace, like I'm saying, like a broken record, then I can relate with you. and I can support you, and I don't have to agree with it. But I'm not like our Congress, who can't agree on a vote. I'm open-minded and willing to listen to what your message is, and maybe I can extract some knowledge on that, because that's what we are as human beings. We're in a globe of working together in cooperation, and that's what separates us from any other species. And so I'm taking that approach to religion and my spiritual beliefs.
Your comment reminds me of Dr. King, Dr. Martin King, who was a very strong Christian, but worked with people of all different faiths and no faiths at all. He worked with people with different sexual orientations. He worked with people of all different backgrounds who believed as he did, you know, as you said, love and peace and nonviolence, and developed one of the most powerful social movements in my lifetime, certainly. And there's a lot to be said for that.
Well, thank you. I genuinely believe that. And for me personally, like I said previously, I believe we all have a cross to bear. Do you have to agree with that? No. But for me, my sight limitation is a cross to bear. The lack of the family support is another mental cross to bear. But I'm also blessed, conversely with that. I'm blessed to number one, have a job in the teaching field where I have the opportunity to be a paragon or a champion for young developing minds. And so I feel like I can go to God with that, whatever the religion is. I know when I transition from this lifetime that I can go to God with that and have a great conversation with God saying, hey, where did I mess up? What did I do right? How can I be better? And that's my outtake.
So Frank, you hopefully will get your degree a year from now, approximately, right?
Peter, we got to celebrate with the ACB and all our involved key stakeholders. Hopefully December 2026.
Right.
Let's have a party.
It is a year from now, approximately. And what are your plans after you get that degree? You're going to write your dissertation. You're going to go through all the, you know, the pomp and circumstance, and then what?
Well, I promised the Houston Council of the Blind that I want to be an active member for them, and whatever role that they need me to do to be a partner, and maybe even a strategic partner, so we can move that program forward, so we can help those surrounding the Houston area. I'd like to also be a partnership with ACB in whatever role and whatever capacity ACB would like me to do. It'd be a privilege and an honor to do that. I've told many leaders within these organizations, I don't have the time to focus on it right now, but please understand I'm here and I answer my phone, and I would love to have a great conversation to see how we can keep pushing the needle forward so we can help those who need it, and we can serve those who need it, and we can make these organizations flourish around the nation.
We have somebody with a question.
Let's do it.
Okay, Sarah, go ahead and unmute.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi there.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Frank.
Hello.
Hi there. Well, Peter asked the question, but my question is somewhat related. You said you're getting your degree in, is it education leadership? Do you plan to maybe become a superintendent, a principal, and more importantly, I know you said you teach at an alternative school. Do you have any plans to help students with disabilities, especially, you know, within the VIB, you know, community, especially with education challenges that obviously they face in the school systems?
Yes, ma'am. What a great question, and thank you. My plans are vastly different from God's plans. What I want and what God wants are two different, mutually exclusive things. Would I love to continue to help those who are visually impaired? Absolutely. And I have aspirations to continue to do so. For example,
God wants that also.
Maybe not.
No,
I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe he wants to go to, he wants him to go to a different direction. We don't know.
But I'll be genuine with you that I'm not chasing money.
Right.
I've told people that, and people don't believe that, and that's okay. if God wants me to be a superintendent, a principal, okay, let's have that experience. But I'm there to serve. Because I feel blessed. Because I know what the alternative of my life outcome could be. It could be very disastrous. Like my students who give up on school, who choose to vape and partake in illicit drugs. That's a very abysmal area to be in. So if it's a principal, if it's a lecturer, if it's a motivator, if it's a paragon or a champion, that's to be determined by a higher power than what I can answer.
Sure.
Frank, a question I wanted to ask you but didn't was you mentioned as part of your work in that, alternative school, you have lots of folks with disabilities. How do you, provide the accommodations they need? How does that tie into the program?
Well, the accommodations is all dependent on their individual education plan or their behavior intervention plan. It's tailored to meet the individual needs of the student. There is definitely not a one-size-fits-all blanket or umbrella for all students. Sometimes students living without a physical challenge think that it's unfair that I'm treating somebody living with a special disability or who needs accommodation. Sometimes I can understand their perspective that it doesn't seem fair, but that's just how it is in our school systems. It's designed to be unfair to somebody who is able-bodied or a member of a dominant group. And I can understand that, but I'm not here to water down my education curriculum, because that would be doing a disservice to the student who has or has no disability. So it's essentially tailored to meet their needs, their specific needs, whether it's through extra testing time, whether it's through modifying the curriculum. And remember, I only have these students for 30 to 60 days.
Right.
So I have to keep that in mind as well.
Do you have any sense of what the recidivism rate is, you know, of folks who come back? When people go through this 30 to 60 day program, how many people come back or how many people don't come back?
Well, you know, you got to consider that the students who are sent to the disciplinary alternative education program or the alternative school, it's a very small percentage, but it's enough to be alarmed about, that educational leaders should be alarmed. The recidivism rate is roughly under 10%, but it's approaching that. It's kind of like a limitation in a calculus problem. It's approaching 10%, which is alarming, because that tells me that the vaping problem within our school district, it's a very real thing. And it seems like, just from my own biased personal perspective, there's principals who either want to get rid of their students, they may be targeting their students, and I can understand that, because I've heard principals say, this kid's a cancer to my school. And that's alarming within itself, because I can't look at a 15-year-old and say, you're a cancer to this environment, because you're under the influence, or you're under possession, or you're distributing of marijuana or a nicotine vape apparatus.
Frank, I'm not sure I understood your answer. Is that 10% figure those who vape, or is it people who come back to your program after going through it more than once?
Yeah, well, keep in mind that it's a majority of vaping. It's a very minority of that proportion, for fighting, for court orders from a judge. It's a very small percentage of students with a felony, such as a gun charge. I have a student who ran over somebody. I'm not going to name names, but this student was sent from a judge. It's like, whoa, it's eye-opening that this 16-year-old kid ran over somebody and fled the scene. And there's their solution. The judge's solution is send him to the DAEP.
Yeah.
But a majority right now at this juncture, a majority of our students are sent to the DAP for vaping, which is why I'm tailoring my dissertation on this topic.
As you said, the research is kind of small. Do you think, I know Texas is its own state, its own area. I would think that whatever you come up with will be helpful for other states as well. whatever research you come up with?
Well, it will give a sense of awareness. Even more so, it will shine a light on the problem that's happening. It's actually happening on a global basis. I've read studies that it's happening in India. Australia's having the same kind of parallel problems. And is it an uphill battle? Of course. Is there a finite solution to the vaping epidemic? I personally don't think so, but that's my own bias.
Yeah.
But what can educational leaders do to provide, maybe a safety net and re-educate our students so they can make better choices and realign their behavior to comply with school policy so they can engage in hashtag graduation? Because that's the ultimate goal.
And what other question having to do with all this? How are you using artificial intelligence, ChatGPT, in all of your work? And how do you anticipate that being used as we move forward in all of this?
At the dissertation level, sir?
Well, yeah. I mean, how are you using chat, whatever it is you're using, AI and chat, but also in the program development that you're doing? I'm just wondering how. You know, we know that ChatGPT is growing, AI is growing like crazy, and I'm wondering how you view it, how you're using it, and how you think it might help you folks or not help your folks as we move forward.
Well, I use ChatGPT as a tool, as a strategic learning tool, not to write my papers, not to, because that'd be a big no-no at the university, a red flag, but you can use it as a tool for looking up various theories. It definitely is a strategic tool for looking up peer-reviewed research. And even more so than maybe a library database at a university or a Google Scholar. At the high school level, I'm not using ChatGPT. Could it be used as part of the strategic planning process? Absolutely. But, you know, that's got to be tailored to meet the needs of an individual campus or learning environment, because there's no one size fits all. But for me personally, to help me with my dissertation process, to look up various theories, to look up various peer reviewed journals, I'm using that as a strategic tool, but not to help me write my papers, not to correct my grammar, which could be awful at times. But that takes practice. And also, to help me catch the words or the periods or the punctuation that I sometimes miss as a sight impaired person, it actually helps me out with that. So I would say more so to answer that question, it's a strategic tool, to complement this experience of going through the dissertation process.
Frank, do you read print or braille?
I read print.
Okay.
Do you know Braille at all? I mean, have you experimented with Braille at all? Or you obviously don't need it, but have you played with it?
No, sir. I've been introduced to it through the Texas Commission for the Blind when that organization was around. I remember my first counselor, Miss Washington, God bless her soul, what a beautiful lady, introduced me to Braille just in case I lost my sight, but that hasn't been the case. Sure. So I've been fortunate enough that the Lighthouse of Houston with Dr. Porter, great man. I'm so love that man. And then of course the University of Houston at the College of Optometry, specifically the low vision department, has helped me get assistive technology, to so I can be a successful student. I'm very grateful to them for all they've done to help me.
And how supportive has ClearLink been through this process?
Oh my God. I just sent, my director of the program a letter that my Vietnamese student wrote me today of thanking and of gratitude to share with him, hey, this is what's going on at this school. And it's, you usually don't hear about teachers getting thank you letters from disciplinary students. But this student who's living with autism is, wrote me a beautiful letter. It made me tear up earlier today. And it's like, that's affirmation that I'm doing the right thing. Because when it touches that heart, when it touches the core heart of your inner self, of your inner soul, it's like, I know I'm doing the right thing. And God has me here for a reason. so I can help this young lady achieve her purpose of hashtag graduation.
And I want to get back to AI for a second. Are students using it? The students that you're working with, are they using it at all?
Oh, no. I restrict that from them because if they do that, then they're going to cheat.
Yes, I certainly understand that. On the other hand, they have to learn how to use it. I mean, you know, this is one of these challenges that I think we all have to experience, right? They have to learn how to function as a member of this culture where everybody's using it, but you don't want to use it for cheating, as you said. I don't know where the line is, but
well, because my subject is finite, with money matters, with math. Math is a finite subject. I don't feel like it's appropriate to use that, especially at this campus. But I would encourage home campuses to most certainly teach their students that because, well, let's face it, man, companies are laying off people and replacing them with AI.
Yeah.
And so my message to my students is, what are you working towards so you can become marketable and an asset to any organization you choose to work for and you're not replaced by AI? I'm at least planting that seed in their minds.
My biggest fear about AI is that it's going to wreck our economy because too many people who write, for example, or write reports, do things similar to all of those things. If AI takes over their work, what's going to happen, Frank, in your opinion? Unless I'm overthinking this process. I don't know.
I think that's a valid perception and I totally respect that. It can be deleterious to our society. I mean, we learned from 2001 Space Odyssey what happened.
Yeah.
That could be a very real possibility. But look, Amazon.
You have 7 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. But like Amazon is laying off people. You got many organizations laying off people to replace them with AI. So I'm asking my students, could you consider trade school? Could you consider being a plumber, an architect, a welder? What's going to help you become valuable so you're not lost in the sauce of unemployment so you don't have to ask Congress for SNAP benefits?
Yeah, no, I think the whole college experience is changing under our feet, that maybe you don't need college as much as we used to 10 years ago, that, you know, that the trades seem to be where the growth is happening.
But if you need to be a doctor or something like that, you still need college, I would assume.
Right. I'm not saying college is dead. I'm saying that I think we need to rethink the way who goes to college and not sort of steer everybody to college necessarily. I think, you know, it's a very different world and kind of.
Well, we heard Charlie Kirk preach that that college is a scam. I can see that. I could kind of agree with that. But as you're saying, yes, we do need doctors, we do need lawyers, and we need to think about training our own
teachers.
Yes, you need teachers and within our own country, not just bring them in and educate them and then let them go back. I don't agree with that. That's my own personal bias though. And is it accurate? For me, yes. But yeah, let's get our population living with limitations, whatever it is, whether it's eye impairment, whether it's hearing impairment, and everybody has worth, everybody has purpose, and everybody has a mission to contribute, even if it's a scintilla of contribution to our society. Let's invest in our own people so they can be successful.
So Frank, I have two more questions for you before I wrap up. What are your plans for Steel Drums for the next few months? What gigs are you working for? What are your plans?
Well, in Trinidad, the steel drum is called a steel pan. And so at Christmas time, I'm dressing up as Santa Claus instead of Santa Claus. And I've been working on Christmas music since you and I performed music together.
I've heard some of it. Yep.
Like the Charlie Brown song, Linus and Lucy.
Yep.
So I've worked up 30 songs to perform with this band that I'm playing with. So I'm going to go around and play at some NPOs, such as community libraries. I'm going to play at a university. University of Houston to be specific. And then I'm also going to play around different businesses such as the Margaritaville Resort in Galveston, specifically Crystal Beach, the Kima Boardwalk. I'm playing for them. And I'm going to go make some people happy. I'm going to play for McDonald's. McDonald's has asked me to come perform for the community in South Houston, which is absolutely rewarding.
Because you know, you mentioned Linus and Lucy. That's about 90% piano.
No, it's not. I mean, yes, it is, but Frank does a really nice steel drum arrangement of that he and I played at the convention last year.
Frank, if you have a file of that, I'd love for you to send it to me. I'd like to hear it if that's okay with you.
Oh, I do. My drummer just made a Panta Claus video clip, so I'll send it to you via email.
Oh, and if you'd thank love you to so share much. I'd love to listen, and I'd love to share it too.
Yeah, send it to me too while you're at it. And then my last question before we wrap this up, and thank you for coming, is what advice would you give to folks 10 years behind you to be successful?
Consider my triangle, my equilateral triangle of mental, physical, and spiritual, so you too can handle the hurdles of life despite your limitations or abilities. Just know that you have purpose. Know that if you put in the work, like me playing music or me working on this dissertation, which is a tedious and daunting process, well, that's the way life is. And if you immerse yourself completely in whatever you're engaged in, that there will eventually be a payoff. Payoff should not be instant gratification. It should be deferred gratification, because those usually yield the biggest result and the most satisfying outcomes. And that will lead to your purpose being fulfilled while you're living this short, very temporary period that we're engaged in what we call life.
Well, Frank, you're setting a very good example for a lot of people, and a lot of people do need you and what you have to offer them. You guide them well, and students and other people should thank God that they could come to you for assistance, whether they ask for it or not. It's a good place for them to be at, and you're providing that. We appreciate you for that, right?
Oh, I'm tearing up now.
I look forward to seeing you in St. Louis in July.
Peter, I don't know how I'm going to drive to St. Louis, but I'm going to make it, brother.
Self-driving car, Frank.
I don't know how you're going to make it, but if you make it, I'll be ready for you. I'll be there.
I will go through hell and high water to come jam with you, my brother.
It was fun. All right. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. We appreciate what you're doing, and keep up the good work. And I'm looking forward to hearing you on the steel drums and all the other music that you do. You send files out, and I'd love to share it with everybody. And you have a blessed day, and thanks again.
I thank you. I love y'all. That's genuine. And I look forward to working with you guys so we can achieve the mission and push that needle forward to serve our society. We're blessed to do it.
I couldn't have put it better than that, Frank. Thanks very much for that. Thanks, yes, Peter. Thanks, Cindy, Brad, everybody else. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, and have a great week, everybody.